I'm calling this meeting to order. Please take your seats if you're members of the PNB. I want to acknowledge that this meeting is happening 45 minutes late. We have the auditor here. I'm told. I'm going to give this a moment to work itself out. We may have to ask the audience to leave for a little while. The auditor tells me that there's part of it he wants to do that has to be done in executive session. The latter part of it will be the financial statements, which are public information, and you are welcome to come back for that. At the moment, we have one objection to doing that, and I'm waiting to find out whether that objection will be... whether she'll step aside or whether we'll have to take a vote on it. I believe he does. I believe he does. I'm not sure that he does, no. What he told me was such that I think, from knowing what the bylaws are, that it doesn't deserve to be an executive session, yes. I'm sorry, but I really need to get this moving. So I'm going to declare that is there any objection on the board here to moving into executive session? Is there any objection? Hearing none, I'm going to declare this an executive session. We'll notify when it means that we have to ask that the room be cleared. It also means that it won't be streamed, of course. Yes, you may. That we will have the same time for public comment afterwards. It's all going to be delayed a bit because of we're late coming back to you to the meeting. But it will be in the same place in the agenda. And I'll try to make the time up so that we're through a little bit sooner than we would have been otherwise. Yes, your question. And you were standing over there, and time was passing, and I decided we had to do something. You want to object to that? Make the objection. Go ahead and say it. Make the objection. We'll take a vote on it. Yes. This is what I wanted to avoid.
You are now
financial impact.
Somebody calls me a fool. I don't have to listen to it.
Oh, right. Let me have your attention, please. Members of the board, let me have your attention. Let me have your attention, please. Dan has just informed me, after reading what the auditor has to say, that he thinks it is actually okay for us to do that in public session. Please, let me finish. Let me finish. I would like to see, by a show of hands, that's his opinion of it. I'd like to see, by a show of hands, we already took a vote. There was no objection. So unless you want to overthrow that, I'd like to see, by a show of hands, how many people would like to go ahead and do this in public session? Put your hands up, please.
Point of information.
Point of information, yes.
Was it on the auditor's advice that it be in closed session?
Yes, it was.
No.
Yes, it did.
That's the auditor and explained that we
then. Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, let's not deep breath, everyone. I spoke with the auditor. I explained that we have a bias towards transparency in Pacifica, that people want things to be open unless they are necessary to be closed under our bylaws and under the law. I think Mr. Paul recognized what I had to say, and even though that's the way they like to work with a lot of their clients, he recognizes that this organization has its own structure, its own values, and its own rules. And there is nothing, I've seen what he's going to tell you. There's nothing that has to be done privately.
Point of information,
just a moment.
Please.
Mr. Paul, are you comfortable now with doing this in public? You are. Okay.
Point of information, please.
So I think that resolves.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, who's speaking?
Point of information, please.
Where are you?
Kathy, right there.
Oh.
In front of you, yeah. I think I just want some assurances that if this is being done in public, that it's not something that's going to be maligning anyone back at the stations, which I'm concerned about.
I am assuming public maligning of anyone.
It has happened in the past.
I'm assuming that.
And
that
I don't
would
want
a,
it to happen again.
If that was about a person, that would be a personnel matter, which would surely be an executive session, and Dan knows that quite well, so, and I assume so.
Well, it has happened on this board in the past.
I hear you.
And I want to be very clear that that doesn't happen again.
I think Mr. Paul has heard that comment, so I don't think we have a problem with that.
Yes, and I think that those of us who served on the audit committee have had the initial report from the auditor.
Sorry. Those of us who served on the audit committee have heard this initial report from the auditor. I believe that it was streamed. And the auditor does bring up very significant financial management shortcomings, but it is not by name, by position, or by individual's name, or whatever. It is for the organization as a whole.
Okay.
Could I have a point of personal privilege?
Certainly, you may.
I don't know. Is it on? I just want to take quite a few deep breaths. And what I have to say might offend George, but that's not my intent. My intent is just to let you know. Speak about transparency. A lot of folks know. Certain things you don't need to discuss in executive session, except for somebody's medical records. That's the only thing I think should be kept in executive session. I'm not for this closed thing. Now, I, as the audit committee chair, I think it's very disrespectful that I said to George, I'll be right back. I'm speaking to the audit, and he goes, he just poo-pooed me, and he said, well, we made a decision. It is disrespectful. Were I a white male on the audit committee, you would not have done that. I said to you, I'm going to find out. And what do? You go ahead and you do just what you want, because I have no rights that you should respect. And I think it's absolutely abominable. And this has been going on, and I'm sick of it. And you're not going to disrespect me off the board, because I'm going to stay. So I don't care what you guys do to ignore me or whatever. I ain't going nowhere.
Mr. Paul. Mr. Paul.
It's typical.
please begin. And would the audience please be quiet so we can have the report?
I guess I should take responsibility and apologize. One of the things that I wanted to accomplish by going into executive session, the audit chair, Nia, is correct. There's nothing that's going to be discussed that hasn't been streamed. However, as a matter of protocol, and I say this with 36 years of history, the auditor, most auditors like to meet with the board in executive session, even as to say there is nothing to discuss, so that the protocol is established in the event that sometime there may be an issue that it should be, so that the board is, and the audit committee meet with the auditor in executive session every time they meet, just as, even if it's, say, there's nothing to discuss. That establishes the protocol.
Thank you.
Could we introduce him? Could I introduce him?
Yes, you can.
Did you introduce him
already? No, please do.
Okay. This is Tony Polo from Helen Donovan, and I would like to acknowledge the Secretary, Susan Young, and, you know, again, I'll stand on top of Mount Everest, and I will say that Susan is the best secretary in the Pacifica Foundation. Susan took the minutes. This is the only committee that had all of its minutes before the end of December that I could put in one email. I compiled it, and I sent it to the former chair, Sherry Gendelman, for posting. There's no other committee that the minutes are all in one place and are ready to be posted. So, Susan, I thank you very, very, very much. On behalf of the committee, you were absolutely wonderful. And to the other members, I don't want to forget who's here, Joe Wanzala. And I can't see that far. Joe is on the committee. I know Evelyn is no longer on the board. Sean, Casey O'Brien, Carolyn. Who else am I missing? Thank you guys very much for your support on the audit committee. Okay, Tony, go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, can I just, because Tony sort of, I'm sorry, backtracked a little bit, what I would request is that if he comes across something or the chair or someone says that we come across something, because I'm very concerned about what Kathy is saying, that we say, that is a matter I recommend we take up in executive session. Because one of the things that the board has to do is to be available to receive whistleblowing complaints. And those, you know, by their very nature, impugn someone or something. And so I think in order to be able to satisfy that responsibility, that we would need to be able to have that flagged and say, this is I think this is a matter that needs to be in an executive session.
I couldn't grasp it. Could you that was confusing. Susan, could you give it to us?
If we need executive session, we'll say, let's go in executive session.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. Thank you.
But we don't think we will.
Mr. Paul, how much time do you think you need?
Probably an hour. It's really going to be depending upon the sort of questions and how much engagement there is with the board.
Okay.
Well, thank you. My name is, as Nia said, my name is Tony Paul. I'm with PMB Helam Donovan. We're an eight-office firm. We specialize in doing audit work. We have over 14 partners and over 100 professionals. We do a whole range of audits, from SEC audits to organize a lot of not-for-profit organizations. In fact, I think we do about 500 not-for-profit organizations. This past fall, we were engaged as your auditors to do an audit for the fiscal year ended September 30th, 2008. And I've just passed out three documents. One is labeled Pacifica Foundation and has got a draft watermark on it. And then there are two letters. One is a two-page letter addressed to Nia, the chair of the audit committee. And the other letter is a five-page letter addressed to the board of directors of the Pacifica Foundation. What I will do is go through the audit report first. That's the one with a draft stamp on it. As you have questions, please stop and interrupt me and ask the question.
Is there an extra board to the board letter?
Says the board of directors. Is there an extra? These are the draft things?
Maybe. No, it's the one that's the board of directors.
Okay, here's. Does everyone over here have the board of directors?
Yeah, we have some extras here, too.
Yeah.
I've got one.
Did everybody get the one that says draft?
Thank you.
The audit is not complete. In substance, the audit is complete. We have the financial statements to a point where we can opine, we can render our opinion, our unqualified opinion on the financial statements on the Pacifica Foundation. However, the last piece of information that we received did not come into us until last night around 4 o'clock yesterday evening. As a consequence, I'm not able to provide in this report draft the detail by radio station that you're used to seeing. That will be provided once we wrap up the final numbers. Again, the numbers will not change. The numbers are, you see on pages 2 through 6, those numbers will stay intact. There may be some tweaking of numbers. You know, it might be in the wrong bucket. However, the net income numbers I feel very comfortable with in my professional opinion. What I'd like to do is to take you to the third page into the report. It's called the Report of Independent Auditors. This is my page. This is the page I write. These financial statements are supposed to be yours. And this is my piece, and it's labeled, it's got our letterhead on it, and it's at the top, it's the Report of Independent Auditors. This is where we sprinkle the holy water on your financial statements. What we talk about, and I will, from time to time, as I go through and meet with this board to review the financial statements, I will take you through to this letter, because it is important. It's the same every year, you know. Very often we just cut and paste the date. But it is a very important document because what it does, it delineates what the responsibility is, where the responsibility lies, what the responsibility is, and what our function is. Now, in this case, you're a not-for-profit community. You're a membership-based community, and you're not a publicly traded company. However, your constituency is the community at large, and you represent the shareholders of the community. Your responsibility is not to the SEC or to NASDAQ. It's to the Attorney General of the State of California because you're incorporated as a California organization. The rules and responsibilities, the duties of this organization are just as important for this organization as they are for any publicly traded corporation. You have a responsibility to diligently discharge your obligations to this organization and to the community of California. Because after all, you receive public funds to run this organization. That's the responsibility. Now, how do you discharge that responsibility? You discharge that responsibility by creating an environment of control consciousness. Quite frankly, that's one of the things that we found really lacking in this organization. I didn't feel that there was any ownership at any level of the financial process. I had a conference call with the audit chair while I was on vacation in the Philippines, and Don. I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce the senior manager. The gentleman on my left is the senior manager in charge of the day-to-day audit process. Don and the in-charge accountant in charge of field work on a daily basis, and I and Nia and a couple of other people were on that call, and we talked about issues that needed to be done. And that was
Don
Townsend. And we provided a list of the items that we were still missing. And we were informed that we sort of backtracked. We said, okay, the board meeting is – the board's starting on the 30th of January, so we need that – we need to be able to get you the report by the 23rd of January, which means we need to have the final information by the 20th of January. We got the final pieces of information last night. Don and his people, more than once, I was getting emails at 3 o'clock in the morning. They were pulling yeoman's duty trying to pull this information together. Now, as a board, you have to take responsibility for that because this is your organization. And how do you discharge your responsibility? You hire management, a general director, a chief financial officer, and an accounting staff, and it's your obligation to make sure those functions are performed. In my personal opinion, actually in my professional opinion, I don't think you've accomplished that. And I can't stress that enough. I've been doing this kind of work for over 36 years. This is one of the most badly run organizations that I've come across. And I'm sorry, but that's a professional experience that most of my partners and I, we come from the Big Eight, which kind of shows we have gray hair. You know, there's only four of them left. We have, I think, about 150 years of Big Eight accounting experience. And I've shared some of the war stories, and everybody just rolls their eyes. And that's a problem because ultimately, as the board of directors, you accept responsibility for this organization. And it falls to you.
Can you, without breaching confidentiality, share some of the particularities of the places where it's sort of worst?
Pulling financial information was like pulling teeth. There were a lot of problems. As I said, there was no sense of ownership of the financial process at any level. And that really stems, I believe that stems, it's the board of directors, the board of trustees that sets the tone for the organization. And I don't believe this board has done it. I mean, look to see how, you know, your interim financial statements. I don't know how often you see them. I don't know how late they are, but my guess is they're probably not very accurate and they're not very timely.
Is that?
Thank you very, very much. And I'm happy to know that our listeners are listening to this. For years, I've been insisting that they hear what we're doing with their money. Is this your first report?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you were not the person last year.
No.
Could you tell from the report you have if this has been happening all through maybe the last 6 years or so?
I can't comment on that.
Good.
I just unable to.
That's fair enough. But when you said that the board is ultimately responsible, can you explain exactly? Because I think some of us here don't quite understand that.
You represent the shareholders of the state of California.
And how are you recommending that we exercise
by
that responsibility?
By establishing a controlled environment that, one, mandates controls, mandates follow-throughs, requests and demands and has a right to obtain information on a timely basis. Let me give you an example.
Good.
One of the frustrations that we've had is pulling financial, getting timely records. All of your records are decentralized. You can't do that. In my professional opinion, those records should be centralized in one location. The accounting department and national office would make requests at different stations, and I'm not going to say which stations, but sometimes those stations would not reply, and it was a time and again and again and again that ask, and to some degree I felt that the individuals charged with the accounting function of the stations felt, well, we have no reporting responsibility to national office, so why should we care what's going on?
But Chair, just one more. That's interesting because we at local level get reports that we cannot get information from central. So this doesn't seem to match.
Well, I can't comment on that because I haven't seen it at the local level. What I can tell you is my sense is that, and again, this is very difficult because this is my first year as your auditor. But my sense of what I'm seeing is that information is entrenched at the branch level. It's not passed up to the national office, who can then assemblage and packet that information. There is a station that we only got MEMSIS information, your donor-based information, within, what, a week? I mean, we'd been asking for this information since we came in at the end of November to start the audit. The information, the financial information, needs to be controlled and centralized in one location. It can't be disseminated throughout. That in itself is a potential problem. As a result of what I've seen in this environment, I've issued, in fact, we'll go over it in the last document. It's the letter addressed to the board of directors. The last page is what we call a material weakness. A material weakness is a situation that, if allowed to exist, will allow a material misstatement in the financial statements to exist and not be detected in the normal course of your internal accounting controls. And I have no doubt that that's occurring. I have absolutely no doubt at all that you would, you know, if we were really to dig in at each local station level, I know we would find out enough problems that, you know. It's not a good report card, but the good news is that hopefully we can only go in one direction.
Fia?
Are you all in a position to design the kind of system that you are indicating needs to be, central system needing to be in place?
Yes.
Okay.
What I will do now is go through the financial statements. Again, this is going to be on a consolidated basis. It's not going to go into the details, and I would not really discuss the details of the specific stations. But if you turn to page 2, this is the statement of financial position. It's a snapshot. We did not audit, and therefore we do not opine on the financial statements for the year ended June 30th, 2007. Our responsibility only relates to 2008 and for years beyond that, for which we're retained as your auditor. We do believe, and we did have some adjustments, we do believe that the financial statements are fairly stated, that they're in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, and we applied consistent auditing standards that allow us to come to our conclusion. A couple of highlights on those financial statements. You'll see the first two lines are cash and cash equivalents and restricted cash, and the restricted cash has grown significantly from $169,000 to $786. The bulk of that's made up of a couple of things. This past year, you received a very significant donation from Dr. Leonard. Part of it has been paid in cash during that fiscal year. In addition to that, you had a certificate of deposit that was securing your line of credit at Wells Fargo Bank, and therefore that certificate of deposit is secured. So we break out those monies because there were restrictions on them. Your operating cash is $1.4 million. That's only less than 40 days.
Right.
That's not a lot. That's in fact, for an organization like you, which only runs a couple of fundraisers every year, that's not a lot of money. And it's something that, you know, management should do an analysis of when, I'm sure management's got an analysis of what it takes to run this organization, what the peaks and flows are. And it's a very critical. You're not at a critical level, but it's certainly it's not a lot of days. Pledges and other receivables went up substantially. A big chunk of that is 1.6 is went up from $1,882,000 to $3,500,000. That's an increase of $1.6 million. Included in that is the current portion due from Dr. Leonard. $200,000 that was paid in December of this year. December of 2007, Dr. Leonard made a matching gift of $1 million to be paid in over a five-year period. We felt that those conditions, those matching requirements had been met, and therefore we recorded the entire amount of the $1 million in 2008. Part of those monies, because they're restricted, In other words, they won't be coming in for the next 3 years. We consider them as temporary restricted net assets. They're restricted by time. And also because they're future value dollars, not present value dollars, we discounted that amount by some $34,000 to come up with an estimate of what that $1 million is in terms of present day value. And that the long-term portion of that Leonard Grant is, you'll see it as in the first line below total current assets as grants receivable, long-term portion, $565,000. Total assets of the organization are $10 million. Total liabilities, $1.6 million. That's up a little from $1.14 million from last year. The big item to note is that you have this advance under the line of credit that's gone from $7,000. You'd drawn on it slightly last year. It's now up to the full $300,000. Currently.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So on this $1 million grant, this $1 million pledge, you're saying that this is the one where we had to match $200,000 a year, right?
Correct.
But you're saying that you booked the whole thing in this year, though, even though we haven't matched it yet, because those years haven't even happened yet?
Well, we feel comfortable enough to know that your level of fundraising is going to be adequate, that it will meet those requirements. But what we did is we reflected it, rather than reflect it as an unrestricted gift, mm-hmm. we've reflected it as a restricted gift. In other words, a gift that will be received over a period of those remaining years. And as such, we don't put it in the... If you look at the third, fourth, and fifth lines from the bottom, we have three different categories of what we call equity, the equity section. And I'll deal with the last one first, permanently restricted net assets. This is an endowment. I give you $1 million. You can't touch the $1 million, but you can spend the interest or mm-hmm. the income therefrom. I give you a temporary restricted gift. It's a matching gift, it's a conditional gift, or maybe it's conditioned by one. You can only spend it on
a
democracy.
A building, say.
Or democracy now, or something very, very specific. Or over time. I'll give you $1 million, but you're not going to get it in $2,200,000 this year, $200,000 next year, et cetera, et cetera. And then those unrestricted gifts, here's $100,000, here's $20 to use for the station for its programs.
Right, but we have to match $200,000 a year in building money, not in pledges for operating, right? I mean, that is what the conditions of it was, as far as I know.
I can't recall the specifics of that, and let me go back and look at that.
Thank you.
It's for a building.
$1 million grant.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that, Chair. I didn't understand. I thought you were saying that this had to be matched with the pledges. You're saying it doesn't have to be matched with pledge. It has to be matched with some other way of raising money?
No, it can be matched through a pledge or cash or grant. There's a variety of ways it can
just
be.
We just have to attain that
to
money
attain that it. Match.
An additional question: if we obtain that match, I think this is Wendy's question. Does that match have to itself be dedicated to the building purpose as well? So there needs to be in order to satisfy the requirements of match, there needs to be a reserve.
I don't recall specifically. Dan, maybe you recall. You said.
Yeah, CFO and I actually negotiated that with Dr. Leonard, and it's $1 million to be utilized for a new facility for WPFW in Washington, and it is to be matched at the rate of $200,000 a year, but... Pacifica is not required in raising the match money to advise donors
that this is a special building fund. In other words, if PFW raises $200,000 a year through its normal fundraising, it can apply that to the match.
Right. And that is the reason we concluded that it was an appropriate re-recorded. If we turn to page 3, which is the income statement, the statement of activity, it's a comparison for the 2 years. You'll see that in the first subtotal, revenues and support, this year it's $17.8 million, last year it's $16.9 million. It's a very, very stable amount. In fact, the good news is that this 2008 numbers do reflect the $1 million from Dr. Leonard. Otherwise, our revenues would be down $100,000 below what they were in the previous year.
I don't understand this at all.
Our expenditures, and we'll go into further detail on the following page, was $16,762,000, which left us with a net profit for the year of $1,068,000. Turn to page 4, which is a statement of cash flows. This is actually, I look at this as being a very, very important statement. The first two statements that we looked at are on what we call the accrual basis. And there we reflect what others owe to us, what we owe to others. This statement attempts to take those accrual-based financial statements and turn them into a cash basis. So ultimately, we sort of look at it the way we do our own checkbooks at the end of the year. You know, is my bank account bigger than it was last December, or has it gone down? On a net basis, our cash went down by some $157,000 over this past year. The first subtotal, operations used some $529,000. Investing activities, which was the net activity of buying equipment, of buying investments, of selling investment securities, generated some $84,000. And then our financing activities, which really meant that, how we borrowed monies, we ended up borrowing $300,000 on the line of credit. That's where our money was generated from this year, and the net result being that we're $157,000 in the shortfall. Pages 5 and 6 are the statement of functional expenses. A couple of items that really stand out. And again, we just received the final information yesterday evening, so we're sort of still analyzing it on a station-by-station basis. But we can comment that salaries, the first line, personnel costs went up marginally. They went up a couple of $100,000 from $8.5 million to $8.7 million. Advertising and promotion. In fact, there is a typo. For some reason, the printer dropped. If you look on the next page for advertising and promotion, you'll see that actual advertising and promotion was $979,000, and somehow something got tripped here. That we dropped a digit, so that
on 2007.
Correct. Yeah, the 2007 number was not 97,890. It was 979,000. 890.
Does that change the total?
No, it does not. No, this was purely a key punch, one of those 3 o'clock key punch events. Included in that is a fairly large amount for the telemarketing campaign that was done for direct telemarketing for $466,000.
In 07.
Correct. One of the other also unusual items, in as much as it's got a negative balance, we set aside in 2007 $150,000 for some legal contingencies. One of those contingencies went away, so we reversed that amount in the amount of $50,000. And that shows as a negative, as an income item in the current year.
I'm sorry, Chair. Can I be recognized?
Yes, sir.
You said there was an item for $150,000. You reversed it, and you reversed 50.
Correct. In 2007, the best estimate of management and the board of directors was that there was some potential legal issues that were going to take $150,000 to resolve. Mm-hmm. There were two separate transactions: one for 50, one for 100.
Oh, gotcha.
And ultimately, the smaller one of those two transactions did not come to fruition. So management felt it was no longer required to be booked, maintained as a potential liability. The footnotes to the organization, which is on the final pages of this financial statement, describe the organization, the accounting policies. In terms of accounting policies, one of the things, and this sort of goes back to control, the opening comments I made about control consciousness, one of the things we notice is in the management letter, premium fulfillment inventories, premium inventories. Different stations were valuing them and using different methodologies. That's a no-no. You can't pick and choose by station. The accounting principles have to be consistently applied. And that goes back, that sort of goes back to, in fact, I started discussing and I somehow got sidetracked. We saw the sense, and I sort of raised this first time I met with the audit chair, that my sense was that the line of reporting at the station level went from the business manager to the local board, and that was the solid line. And maybe there was a dotted line up to the National Office Accounting Department. And that dotted line did not have to be followed. And again, that sort of goes back to that ownership. But that was this very strong sense that, oh, well, if it's a national office request, it doesn't have to be dealt with.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to comment that the impression that I had at the local station board was that the financial director in the local station reported to the CFO, and that we got our information only when the CFO was able mm-hmm. to provide it.
That's right.
And it was frequently Correct. Delayed, and sometimes Correct. For many months.
Correct.
So yeah. there is a mismatch mm-hmm. in terms of what the experience is being a local station board member and how this is being presented.
It could well be, because I don't have the history. As I said, I don't have the history of what's transpired. But it still goes to the point
right.
that nobody's taking ownership right. of the process.
Right.
And that should be. And that ownership has to be at the national level for all the stations, not only for the national office, but for all of the stations.
As a follow-up from Suzanne, and Suzanne, you're actually right, can you explain what evidence do you have that this responsibility moved from the business manager to the LSB, the local station board? What evidence did you get of that? Is that what you said?
I'm sorry?
You meant from the business manager to the general manager.
Well, I'm sorry. I might have misspoken the point I was trying to get across was that the sense that we got in terms of, and this is in part based upon the requests that were made, the number of times we'd have to request that information. In a normal corporate environment, a chief financial officer or a controller makes a request of the divisions for financial information. And there's always that sort of implied threat. I've got to produce for the financial department, because if I don't, I'm going to be evaluated on my performance. Part of the sense that I got was, I don't care how I'm evaluated, because you have no bearing on what I do, because I work for the local station board. That's where my reporting goes to. It doesn't go to a national level. That is my sense, my impression.
You see, this is where I have a problem, because and we, as a board, we need to discuss this $1 million donation or whatever it is. It relates to the station that I come from. And as a local station board, we're yet to get a comprehensive report of that expenditure and the return on that expenditure. And a lot of what I'm hearing here is news, although I'm a very active member on that board. And this, to some extent, doesn't match the impression that you have that the local station board has such control and oversight. It doesn't happen.
Well, I'm not saying I'm not saying that the local station board has the oversight. What I'm saying is that the reporting does not. The reporting appears to go, and maybe the reporting doesn't go to the local station board.
It doesn't.
But it's certainly not going. We don't believe it's going on a timely basis to the national office. So that's why, by inference, I was assuming, well, if national is not getting it, then maybe the local station board. But that, again, that goes to my point, and that is there should be somebody within this organization that looks on it from an organization-wide basis, says, I need to have this information on a consolidated basis, and by the way, you doggone better well be producing the information for each of your respective divisions, and I'm going to evaluate on you on your performance. And that's one of the things I don't think is there.
You know,
I'd like to be on the staff.
That would be helpful.
I'm sorry, you want me to identify the people on the board?
I'd like to be on the staff.
Kathy?
Question. Yes.
Which stations are involved here, please?
My question is this. As I'm listening to you, I hear you have... For some reason, cause to make certain presumptions about the situation around the station, about the situation in terms of the flow of information. And they're probably presumptions that are not based on really understanding whatever the situation on the ground is. So I think it would be important for us to look at this in a more clinical way, rather than saying, a particular... business manager is not giving information and obviously doesn't care about evaluations, that there may be a crisis situation on the ground that needs to be addressed for any number of reasons. Could it be a breakdown in equipment? Could it be recent firings that have reduced departments? Could it be, you know, there's any number of reasons for a breakdown, and to make the presumption that we have a business manager that's not doing their job, I think is improper at this time.
And I think that's a very valid point because, you know, at KPFA, there was a departure in the middle of the audit. At national office, there's the controllership spot is missing, and I believe that may be the case at several others, at some of the other stations. Again, I think from in a corporate environment, somebody's got to take charge.
I understand that. I just want to be clear, you know, because I do have some history with this organization. I understand how information can be skewed for purposes other than just getting the financial details, and I don't want your report to be skewed in such a way that somebody is going to be singled out when clearly, from my perspective, you know, this is a top-down organization, especially with regard to financial standards, and I think that, like you said, the board ultimately has to be responsible, and I don't want to see particular employees unnecessarily scapegoated.
I have a stack here, but let me remind you that the point of this meeting is not to tell Mr. Paul how we work, but to listen to from him as to what he has to say about what he's seen. So I have Sean, and then I have Leslie. I had Sean and Rico, and then Leslie, and then Afia.
A very simple question, Mr. Paul. What was our CFO's response to all this?
His responses are included in the management letter, which we'll go through next.
Good. You're going to bring that out.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'll hold my question until a little bit later.
Okay. Rico, do you want to?
I'll wait till he finishes his report, too.
Okay. And Afia?
On page 6 in the statement of functional expenses, The expenses are itemized, and my question is where do these numbers come from? Of particular interest to me is the NFCB conventional expenses at $23,000.
As far as page six goes, comes from your prior audit report. This is information for 2007. In terms of 2008, which is concluded on page 5, this is information that's derived from your current year's general ledger that we have audited. You have a very complex general ledger. It's sort of laid out by division. So we go in and we audit the overall from a top-down perspective. And then as we do that, we get down into the level of details which sort of percolate down to the lowest level, being the denominator, being the station, whether it's KPFT, WBAI, KPFA, whichever station it may be. And then as we see problems with the supporting documentation or potential issues, we recommend adjustments. We review those with the station manager. They, in turn, then get posted to your books and records, and we get back an adjusted trial balance that helps us put together these detailed schedules. And it's this last part that we haven't received yet. But the information comes from you. It sort of comes from the local organization up to national, and we audit the information at the national level.
Please continue.
That's it for the footnotes. There are two other documents you have, and the first one is, which I'll talk to, is the one addressed to the chair of the audit committee. This is a required communication that we now have to go through. It sort of discusses our responsibility. And as stated, our responsibility is to be able to perform some functions in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards to make sure that your financial statements are materially correct. And that's important, materially, because we can't go down and nail everything down to the penny. What we're doing is making sure that your financial statements are correct, fairly stated, so that if somebody were to rely on them, even if there was an error in those financial statements, their opinion, if they became aware of the financial statements, their actions or their opinion on those financial statements would not change. For example, you know, you've got about $10 million worth of assets. So if assets are off by $1,000, the bank is not likely to change its opinion about your creditworthiness. If it was off by $2 million, I think they'd probably have a say. So we go through and we gauge that. What we do, we sort of, you know, it's a mystical pot. It's a judgment call. It's a professional judgment call. We try to come up with what is a material amount, and we do that at the start of our audit process. And we go through that and say, okay, below this level, this will not be material, and above this certain threshold, it will be material. That number can change depending upon the requirements. If it's a specific debt issue, the level of materiality may go down to a very, very small level, particularly if it's a compliance-based issue that you have with the bank or the IRS, because there it's wrong or it's right. It doesn't matter whether it's wrong or it's right in excess of $1,000. It has to be wrong or right. So the materiality can change by the particular account. The next, we've got significant audit findings. And management is responsible for the selection and use of appropriate accounting policies. Actually, you as the board are really responsible. You discharge your responsibility by hiring a management team to do that for you. But ultimately, remember, the responsibility for this organization rests with you. We looked at your accounting policies. They seem to be reasonable. We did have some problems with valuation issues. We will make sure that that is corrected. Accounting estimates. There are sometimes we need to make accounting estimates in these financial statements. You know, we discounted a gift. We had to use an estimate for the interest rate that we should use. We sort of tried to make it consistent with what your you're experiencing in your present returns. We have to make assumptions or estimates about the depreciation policy you should use. You know, should it go for 15 years or 20 years? How long should items be depreciated for? We have to make the organization has to make estimates about potential bad debts, how much will be written off. And we go through and evaluate those estimates and then conclude whether or not we're comfortable that those estimates have been fairly applied. In our professional opinion, they are. Difficulties performed encountered in, this is on the next page, difficulties encountered in performing the audit. We will discuss that in the next letter. Yes, there were. It was very difficult. Disagreements with management. No, we didn't have any disagreements. Occasionally, management and the auditors disagree on issues. And occasionally, it doesn't happen too often. Management will go out and shop for another opinion because they don't like ours. They'll try to shop around. We didn't notice that occurred. We obtained the representations from management. Other audit findings or issues, yes, we have those in the management letter. Which brings me to the last document, which is the board of the management letter. We have, over the last few years, the accounting, and this is directly as a result of what's happened at Enron and all Delphi and all of those different organizations. The accounting profession has sort of woken up and said, look, we need to focus more on audit risk. As you go through, we just can't go in and kick the tires on everything. We need to hone in and try to identify where we believe risk exists and focus in on those areas. But at the same time, they said, okay, let's redefine what we call our findings. And basically, we concluded that, you know, you might have a reportable transaction, and then it might raise to the level of being a significant deficiency. And then ultimately, if it's a really big issue, and what I'd call an F in terms of a report card, I'd say it's a material weakness. Well, we've got a few significant deficiencies that we wanted to talk about, and we've got one material weakness. The first one, bank reconciliations. KPFA, some of the bank recs didn't tie out. How can a bank reconciliation not tie to the general ledger? That's a problem. Should not happen.
What exactly is a bank reconciliation?
Sir, it's when you agree the banks that you reconcile the bank statement to your checkbook. You take the balance per bank and you add in deposits in transit, deposits that have not, you know, reflected in the general ledger and not in the bank statement, and you subtract out those checks that you've written but have not yet cleared the bank. And hopefully one matches the other. In fact, it's a very important step. It's a critical step. And how that cannot be in balance is an issue. Now, we didn't believe it was material because our level of materiality in this area was large enough. It could have been. I mean, if it was all in one bank account, let's say that $1.6 million or whatever it is you have at the end of the year, if that was in one bank account and we found that it was not in balance, and your process would not catch it, your internal controls would not catch it in your normal process business activities, then I would have demanded to meet with the chair of the audit committee as soon as I became aware of that, because that is a material weakness that, you know, potentially it's whether it's an error or it's intentional fraud, it's a problem, and your controls, internal controls, were not catching it. So in this case, it was somewhat of an anomaly. There haven't been any issues about like this in the past. The business manager left in the course of the audit. But again, we don't look at those. As auditors, we look to see that there's this environment. And we can't make exceptions for people or circumstances. We say, do you have a system that works? You know, is there a control system in place? Things happen. And that's the result. Fulfillment inventories, we've already talked about that. You're using different methodologies at different stations. They need to be consistent. as a board, I understand that a few years ago you passed a new accounting policies and procedures manual. You know, that this should not be happening. It should be very clear. I mean, at the station level, somebody should say, okay, what do I do? How do I record fulfillment? There shouldn't be any difference between any of the stations. Segregation of duties. This particular aspect comes up fairly often, and we recognize it's an issue, particularly for a small organization. You know, this is not PG&E where you've got 200 people in the Treasury Department, you know, writing checks, and another 200 people in accounting, or 400 people in accounting, causing transactions, and there's no overlay. From a control perspective, as auditors, we want to make sure that those people who have access to assets, and that is who can write a check, who can authorize a check to be written. Because if a station manager can go down to the bookkeeper and say, please write a check to John Smith for $10, he's got as much access to assets as the person who wrote the check.